What do ghosts do when they're bored? If I hang out near a power plant, will I become an X-Men? Answers to these questions and more on this episode of This Paranormal Life.
Ayo!
Oh, back on a Tuesday. That's right, you're listening to This Paranormal Life, the paranormal podcast where every week we dissect a different paranormal tale, case, claim, and get to the bottom of whether that is true or whether it is false. And as always, you're joined by myself, Kit, and this professional paranormal investigator across the table from me, Mr. Roy Pars.
That's right, that's right. You know what day I don't like solving paranormal crimes? The day that doesn't end with Y. Am I right?
which day is that?
Chortle. It's a secret day I invented in between Friday and Monday.
And we have to cover that on a different episode, but that is not what we're covering today.
Subscribe to the Paranormal Patreon and you will get your bonus episode every chortle.
Chortle doesn't come around too often, I'll tell you how much.
No, you know, like leap years? Well, we have leap chortles. And that means we put up the bonus episodes whenever the f*** we feel like it. We're not really plugging our Patreon well. You get a monthly bonus episode consistently. And every chortle.
Welcome back to the podcast. We're just going to dive right into today's investigation. What we're going to talk about today is not just top secret. It is beyond top secret. Listen, some of our investigations are a breeze, a slice of cake, a wet blanket, a puppy dog's laugh, a literal piece of candy floss. But not today. Today we put our lives on the line. Are you ready?
No.
Put out your hand, pass me that knife.
I said no.
Because we're going to shake hands, blood brothers.
I don't know
style.
Why you have a knife in a podcast studio for a start. That's weird. Also, I said no.
It's a ceramic knife. I snuck it past the metal detector you installed.
I 3D printed it from this briefcase.
Well, listeners, this is your warning. If you keep listening, when you go to sleep tonight, you're gonna wake up in Guantanamo Bay. It's November 2nd, 2005, and one Victor Martinez email account just started blowing up. Emails everywhere.
Going viral.
You see, Victor started a private mailing list comprised of the world's top foremost UFO researchers, around 150 in total. Some famous names in the paranormal world in there, some not, but most importantly, all classified names. So these UFO experts use this list to communicate and disseminate information securely between each other.
Right.
Well, on November 2nd, 2005, one email got everyone's attention.
You've got mail.
It's porn, isn't it?
Yeah, it was topless nudes.
You know,
very much so. It was topless.
It's just like
nudes.
One guy like sending an email, unidentified object seen over the Himalayan mountains. Boom, another email. Strange footprints found in the North American regions of the foresty areas. Mm-hmm. And then boom, one guy, check out these bazongas.
Larry, you
can't
do this.
Am I right, gentlemen?
This is a UFO. I mean, they are bazongas, but this is a UFO mailing list. You can't just hijack it like you do every time.
This is a UFO. This is a unbelievably f***ing oversized bazongas.
Where was the B in that acronym?
The B was silent.
Okay. We have to kick you out. I only wish someone could invent an internet forum or something so that we didn't have to communicate with Larry over email. No, it was not porn. An email came through the network written by someone claiming to be a retired senior official in the Defense Intelligence Agency, a.k.a. the DIA.
Wow. What does that stand for?
The Defense Intelligence Agency.
Oh, right. Missed that. And the abbreviation, when expanded, it means...
Have you ever heard of the DIA?
No.
I hadn't either. I kind of thought it was made up when I first read, but apparently this is completely a real thing. You've got the CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, and then you've got the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Ah, this seems like that would fall under the CIA's jurisdiction.
CIA seems sort of more, it's like the FBI, isn't it? It's not military, it's like detectives.
Yeah, because when something's going down, they're the ones that always arrive to the scene and go over to the military guys and go, mm-hmm. We're in charge now.
That's, you know, right.
And they then, take
and
over.
Then the they're always pissed. They're always like, oh, it's so annoying because you can do this to us, but oh, we hate it.
And then they, as you know, just revenge, go to like a local crime scene.
Right.
And there's like, a police officer and they're like, we're taking over this case. And the policeman's like, God damn it. What can I do?
And he just walks over to a traffic warden.
Yeah, and he's like, get the f*** out of here. The traffic warden's like, goddamn pig.
And then the traffic warden
goes to like a lollipop man.
lowest form of official in this country.
Just goes, you better back the f*** up out of here.
I'm on this investigation now. Two people get run over by a car and a zebra crossing. Like, oh, Jesus.
Like, immediately.
I really shouldn't have distracted you from your job.
He does not know how to rule the streets at all.
The lollipop man reveals a badge, undercover DIA.
It goes full circle, baby.
This retired senior official claimed to be in possession of potentially sensitive information. Not only that, they claim to be the spokesperson for a group of six DIA personnel. They call themselves Anonymous.
Oh, like the hacking group?
Yeah, this is before that, though.
Okay, the OG, I guess.
This one email would create a firestorm within the UFO research community. Immediately, members of this mailing list were arguing back and forth about whether it was even real. They were upset because, if true, this email would change not just human history, but intergalactic history.
Wow.
It all begins at Roswell. That's right, the Roswell, 1947. So if you're listening at home and you don't know the story of Roswell yet, first of all, how dare you? Also, we did a whole two-part series on it not that long ago, so you're going to want to go listen to that. The DIA operative known as Anonymous wrote,
"First, let me introduce myself. My name is Request Anonymous. I am a retired employee of the U.S. government. I won't go into any great details about my past, but I was involved in a special program. As for Roswell..."
Which is really fast to get into Roswell, yeah, in an email, by the way.
Also, is it first name Request, second name Anonymous?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess.
Sorry for questioning you, sir. Mr. R. Anonymous.
Rupert Anonymous. Shit, I shouldn't have said that.
Rupert James. Wait, that was even more. Anonymous Anonymous.
Roswell occurred, but not like the storybooks tell. There were two crash sites. One southwest of Corona, New Mexico, and the second site at Pelona Peak, south of Detil, New Mexico. The crash involved two extraterrestrial aircraft. The Corona site was found a day later by an archaeology team.
So this is the crash that everyone knows about, essentially.
Right.
This team reported the crash site to the Lincoln County Sheriff's Department. A deputy arrived the next day and summoned a state police officer. One live entity, an EBE, was found hiding behind a rock. The entity was given water but declined food. The entity was later transferred to Los Alamos. The information eventually went to Roswell Army Airfield. The site was examined and all evidence was removed. The bodies were taken to Los Alamos National Laboratory because they had a freezing system that allowed the bodies to remain frozen for research. The second site was not discovered until August 1949 by two ranchers.
How far along is that?
2 years.
2 years? No one found the site for 2 years?
No questions, please. This is an email.
Just 2 years, it seems like a long time. Then no one would have found this. How's he living out there? You said he didn't have any food or water.
No one said there was an alien at the second side of the crash.
So it just crashed by itself then, Rupert Anonymous?
No, it didn't crash by itself.
Well, don't get angry. You're not making it up. It's not a personal story.
This is ridiculous. They reported their findings several days later to the sheriff of Catron County, New Mexico. Because of the remote location, it took the sheriff several days to make his way to the crash site. Once at the site, the sheriff took photographs and then drove back to Detil. A recovery team from Sandia took all custody of the evidence, including six bodies.
So there were bodies. It's just you said there weren't bodies. You were actually pretty aggressive when I asked if there were bodies.
There weren't at that point in the story, and now there are, so...
Okay.
So right off the bat, imagine you're Victor Martinez. It's late one November evening, and this email lights up your inbox. As someone who said Roswell happened, you studied the case, you know the evidence. What are you thinking about this take on events?
I think somewhere in my investigations, I actually came across some reports that said that there were, in fact, two crash sites. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how deeply I went into that because it's been a while since we did that investigation, but I think I did mention it. Now, in the second part of that episode, we talked a little bit about the guy who said he worked for the government, saw the objects on the radar, then went to that crash site where they recovered bodies from the scene.
Yeah.
So that is much more in tune with what Rupert Anonymous is saying.
Yeah, because he's confirming that first crash site, but saying that a live entity was recovered there.
Yeah.
As well as a second crash site where bodies were recovered.
Yeah, I believe he said six.
Right.
And in my reports, they were all pretty much either dead or incapacitated. There wasn't a little space goblin hiding behind a rock that they had to shovel and put in the back of a van, presumably.
There used to be stories, kind of discredited in this day and age, of a body being taken away in an actual ambulance. And it was used to be said that a nurse witnessed this and then later went missing.
Yeah.
And these days they think that that nurse didn't actually exist, that
at
she was a fictional character. But the idea of an ambulance being needed was in the public consciousness for a while, at least.
Yeah. And also, I believe we talked a bit about the coroner that was called.
Right.
Asked about embalming fluids.
That's right.
But then I don't remember if that was utter bullshite or not.
Yeah.
He might have been a maniac. I don't remember at this point. Either way, we said it was real, so let's move past that.
So at this point, the military scientists are going through the wreckage of the two crash sites. But it's the 40s, and they don't have a clue what they're even looking at. But more importantly, what about this recovered entity, the EBE-1, as he's referred to? In basically all other accounts of Roswell, if there was a body found, it was dead and an autopsy performed. There aren't really credible accounts of a living thing found at the site.
Right.
But luckily, Anonymous goes into a little more detail. Anonymous says that it spoke in, quote, tonal variations. It seemed to be at least humanoid. It had a head and limbs and made noises with its mouth. And according to this email from this group known as Anonymous, over the next couple of years up to 1950, scientists at Los Alamos were able to make contact and communicate with EBE-1.
Tonally?
Yes.
So like, ha, 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 ha. Because that's all I can think of when you think about tonal communication.
EBE-1's like, you know I could talk, right?
What? It's been 2 years! Or do you think it's
I could talk this entire time.
They wheel him in and they be like, okay, so the alien talks tonally through like different melodies. So you're going to have to communicate. And so they're like, EBE-1. Oh, ha, oh, ha, ha. And EBE-1 is like, ooh, yeah, baby, come on, yeah. They're like, all right, he sings. I don't know how I got here. I'm hungry as shit. Would you like some water? F*** off. I want some space juice. I don't even know if he's intelligent life. The food here sucks.
Like, why is he so sassy? Are they all like this in your planet?
Everyone else is really nice. That's why I got evicted. So we got the dick one. He was kicked off the planet. Correct. Is it cool if I crash here tonight? We need to get him. We need to get this guy out of here.
For an entirely musical entity, he's the worst taste in music as
well. I think he's smoking a joint in the corner right now. They're like, don't worry, we've got actually another body from the crash. Maybe we can communicate with him. The other alien just starts moonwalking across the room. Oh, for this one just dances.
Communicates through dance. He's just popping and locking to every question.
Real interpretive shit. He's like a flower blossoming falling to the floor.
Super annoying contemporary dance.
God damn it.
Scientists were supposedly able to decipher the noises you just heard to communicate basic ideas. But what does an extraterrestrial biological entity even talk about? Their home planet, of course.
Right.
EBE-1 said that it was from Zeta Reticuli, a binary star system in our galaxy just 40 light years away. Okay, well that's great. But if you're a scientist at Los Alamos, what are you asking EBE-1? Well, they got EBE-1 to explain the contents of their crashed ship. You know, we get our hands on all this space tech, but we don't know what any of it does, especially back in the 40s.
He's being pretty open about all this stuff. I would have thought he'd be a bit more reserved.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he doesn't have many bargaining chips. You know, you want to make yourself useful.
You know the CIA. If we make contact with an extraterrestrial. They're waterboarding that thing. They're electrocuting his space nipples.
Juice.
No, absolutely not. It's a bat. He tells them whatever you want.
Like I say, this arrangement works for EBE-1. After all, if they can get access to his ship, maybe he can get home somehow. So in the wreckage, scientists believed that they had found a communication device, but it was completely indecipherable. So they took it to EBE-1. He showed them that it needed a power source from one of the crash sites. And of course, Los Alamos scientists aren't just going to speak English into this thing. They're going to need input from EBE-1 to make contact with anyone.
Right.
So in the summer of 1952, EBE-1 started sending messages back to Zeta Reticuli using this communication device.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Kit, when we bottle up our emotions, it can start to affect us negatively. Sometimes it's important that we get stuff off our chest.
Tell me about it. I found a UFO in the forest, and now this thing is attached to my chest.
Jesus, that's an alien. Mm-hmm. All right, I was speaking metaphorically about dealing with emotions and talking about our feelings by using services like BetterHelp.
I don't need to talk about my feelings. This thing can read my mind.
Therapy can be a great way to set boundaries and become the best version of yourself. With BetterHelp, you can get matched with a licensed therapist that suits your needs. It's online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
You're saying they can get things off my chest, like Zonktar here?
Don't give it a name.
Maybe me and Zonktar can sign up for BetterHelp together.
Give it a shot, and whatever it is, get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ParanormalLife today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ParanormalLife.
Nice. So in Anonymous's first email, they write,
"The first message let his planet know that he was alive. The second message explained the crash 5 years earlier and the death of his crew. The third message asked for a rescue craft. The fourth suggested a meeting with the leaders of planet Earth. The fifth suggested an exchange of humans and Ebens."
Which is what they were called, apparently.
Ah.
"The sixth message that EBE-1 sent provided the Ebens with landing coordinates for any future rescue or visitation mission to Earth."
But all summer, there was no response. And EBE-1 was getting sick. You know, he's away from his home planet for a few years at this point. He was in a goddamn crash. Who knows what they're doing to him, as we discussed.
Yeah.
So he's not doing so good.
Our air could be his cyanide.
Exactly.
We don't know how this shit works.
It's a miracle he's still breathing.
Yeah.
Fearing the worst, the scientists scrambled to decipher as much of his language as they could. And around this time, they thought they understood only around 30% of the basic concepts. And in winter of 1952, EBE-1 died before he ever got a response from his home planet.
Oh, shit.
"Once EBE-1 was gone, we were on our own. We sent several messages over a six-month period in 1953, but we did not receive anything in return. However, we adjusted our efforts and fine-tuned them over the next 18 months. And when we sent two messages in 1955, we received a reply."
They could barely make out the message. It took consulting the best linguists the DIA could offer, as well as reportedly some international academics in linguistics, to have a go at this thing. And knowing that this was an unsustainable way of communicating without EBE1 around anymore, they took a bold step. With their next message, they decided to reply in English. After all, if the Ebens are so much more advanced than us, they could probably decode English way faster than we could decode their language.
That's actually a pretty smart idea.
Anonymous wrote,
"Approximately 4 months later, we received a reply in broken English. Sentences that contain nouns and adjectives, but no verbs. In one message, they provided us with a form of alphabet. Over the next 5 years, we were able to hone our understanding of the Eben language. However, we had a major problem. We tried to coordinate an Eben landing on Earth, yet we could not understand their time and date system, and they couldn't understand ours."
That must be really tough. Because in your head, you're like, oh, maybe to them, 6 p.m. is 12 a.m., you know? That's what it is. But in reality, you're like, all right, what time do you want to meet? And then they're like, let's meet at 12:45. Like, it wouldn't make any sense. It's so different. Let's meet just to the left of the upside down corner of the smell of burning. It would be nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's not time.
You know what they say? If a lion could speak English, we still wouldn't have a f***ing clue what it was saying, because a human's set of references by which they navigate life are so completely alien to how a lion navigates the world that our frames of reference just would not overlap. The things that even an animal thinks about compared to what a human thinks about are not compatible, let alone a creature that lives in another star system where, by the way, there are two suns.
Yeah.
The rotations of their planet alone, the gravity, everything will be different.
I mean, scientists probably would think that, but you know, the second they make the equipment that allows a lion to talk, he's going to be like, "Roar! I love eating zebras!" It's like, oh, he's actually really black and white.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we thought it was. "I have to piss now!" He just walks over to the corner and like, he's like, "Hey, he's going to the bathroom.
I'm horny, hungry, and tired."
Yeah, it's like, it's really funny.
But same as
Hammer
5 minutes
the
ago
nail,
then?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
The Ebens didn't explain any astronomical data of planet Serpo or their system, but they sent a message indicating they would return to Earth on a particular number of date and location that we chose.
That's a pretty good idea. It's like, if you're going to meet your friend and they don't, it's like a one-way communication,
right?
You know, you got to contact them on a payphone or something. You're best just to call on the payphone and just go, "Hey, I'll meet you here in 3 hours." Even if they can't respond.
Comparison is way too close to the situation that you were trying to give an example of. You're like, let's just say your friend's like on another planet and it's a one-way communication and he's a Eben. It's like, you're telling the same story. The transponder's been destroyed and the one guy that can help you is dead.
You have a mate called EBE1. He tragically died in the winter of 52. Your best just to tell the person.
I do get it.
It's the onus is now on them, balls in their court, yeah, to decipher this and get the data in time.
It's pretty baller as well to be like, you know, "Oh, what are you saying? Oh, what does this mean? What is your time? What is our time?" And then just, you know, the military man grabs the mic and goes,
"Listen up, you little alien bastard. 12 a.m. here, the desert. You, me, peacetime."
And he like, boom, drops the mic, smashes on the floor. That was like,
"If you're even 1 minute late, we will nuke you. Every minute the meeting is delayed, we will nuke one of your many sons."
They're just like, "We're just going to go to China. They're way more friendly.
We're giving them a lot of our gear."
Oh.
Picks up his cell phone. "Listen up, China." You.
The date they chose: April 24th, 1964. The location? The southern sector of White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico.
Our government officials met in secret to plan the event. Several months into the planning process, President Kennedy decided to approve an exchange. An exchange of a special military team.
Not only were the Ebens going to come to Earth, but according to these DIA operatives, the sitting president of the United States signed off on Ebens coming to Earth, but Earthlings going to planet Serpo.
Who would be chosen?
They decided that each member must be military. They must be single. No children. They must have over 4 years of service, and they must have more than one specialty. They must be entirely sheep-dipped and cleared of any identification problems that would haunt them while on the trip. One suggestion was to list all the members as being dead, but it was decided each team member would be listed as missing in action on official records.
In case they ever came back?
Yeah.
Every single record on each team member was purged, including their social security records, tax returns, medical records, military records, and any other ID were destroyed and collected and placed in a special storage location.
So maybe they're not coming back.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Fingerprints burned off. Any living relatives murdered.
We actually just slit their throats after. Just killed them all.
They were going to die anyway.
From 56,000 candidates, we screened down to 12. These were the best of the best.
Do they have a cool name? You got it. If you're like a team of space exploring badasses, you got to have some name. The Boundless 12. Isn't it? 12 Space Rangers. Cheaper by the dozen.
What? How's that badass? Fantastic Four. Oh, wait, that's taken.
There's 12.
And they're not four.
Let's call them the Galactic 12. That sounds badass.
Okay. But there was a problem. The Ebens cancelled. They said that they would come, but they're not going to exchange at this time. They didn't want to exchange. They just wanted to visit.
Probably shouldn't have taken all that time to name the Galactic 12. I didn't realize how redundant they were going to be almost immediately.
You can imagine the panic. Are they trying to f*** us? Are they trying to double cross us? What if the whole time EBE-1 was a goddamn mole?
We need to shoot first!
Sent to lull us into a false sense of security. Are they going to come down here guns blazing? Lasers blazing? Not to mention, during this time, America lost President Kennedy. That was enough to spook several in the military out of going ahead with this project. But executive command was given to continue the meeting.
The Ebens sent a message confirming the time, date, and location of their landing. Two crafts were en route to Earth. The first Eben craft entered our atmosphere during the afternoon of April 24th, 1964. The Eben craft immediately landed at the wrong location, near Socorro, New Mexico. There were 16 senior U.S. government officials on the ground, including military officers. The Ebens exited their craft and walked under a canopy. They gave gifts of their technology, a translator device. You could reportedly speak into it and it would read out a translation.
A couple members of Anonymous also allege that the Ebens handed over what has become known as the Yellow Book, an artifact that supposedly holds Earth and humanity's entire history in one place, as documented from 40 light years away.
Sorry, if they have a functioning translator and a book that contains the history of Earth, why have they struggled so much to grasp one word of English?
I think they've been working on the translator just over the last few months, knowing that they're coming to Earth for like an actual official meeting.
But haven't they been talking to them for like 2 years at this point?
And we don't know exactly what else happened at that meeting, but we do know they agreed upon an exchange 1 year later. And so, in July 1965, in the Nevada desert, the Galactic 12 gathered at the meeting point.
Yes, motherfucker! Here we go! The motherfucking Galactic 12! G12, baby! I am amped up! I knew these bastards were gonna come back into the show!
During the exchange, only a selected few officials were present. The Eben craft landed and our team was placed on board to travel 40 light years to Zeta Reticuli.
Yes, boy. Galactic 12 leaving this planet. You know, like, you know how it's like the NASA team have those cool NASA jackets?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the jackets the goddamn Galactic 12 have?
Woo!
They probably have like freaking Blade Runner style neon
right.
jackets
right.
with like popped collars, space shades on.
Like if you ever go to like British Museum or whatever. And do you ever see like the samurai armor outfits?
Yeah.
You'll read the little description. It'll be like, it would have taken a Japanese peasant 20 years to make this suit of armor.
Yeah.
It cost close to like $1 billion.
Of course.
In that time's money. That's what the Galactic 12's outfits are like.
Absolutely. And they don't even care.
they're spilling ketchup on them.
Yeah, left, they're right, so center. Cool. Their problems are out in space, not here on Earth.
Who's, like, we don't have to cast all 12, but if this is a movie, who's, like, the top, like, three Galactic 12
characters? Top three Galactic 12. I think one of them is going to be Ryan Gosling.
Right.
Steely-eyed, cool composure.
But I don't know if I buy him, though, as a military, like crack squad guy.
How dare you, sir? That's Ryan Gosling you're talking about.
But he's too, like, dreamy. He's floppy-haired. We're
he's
talking,
gorgeous. He's in the Galactic 12.
We're talking shaved heads, multiple years of military service.
That's a couple of them are rough and ready. Most of them are goddamn tens. Rippling abs, huge pecs, biceps the size of goddamn mountains.
Three to four of them are just Victoria's Secret models.
Exactly.
Carly Kloss is in there for some reason. Because she can code.
They, like, you know, if you're putting members of the human race onto an alien spaceship and taken to another planet, you want them to arrive on that planet and everyone to be like, holy shit, humans are gorgeous.
Right. You want the aliens to want to bang the first humans. Like, they mostly sent Neil Armstrong to the moon because in case there were moon people...
Yeah.
He was very charming.
Neil in his prime was a smoke show. Was
That's
an
right.
absolute
Not a lot
10
of people
of
know that.
Yeah.
And yes, it was hid because of the technological restrictions at the time. It was hidden under a spacesuit. But these days, they're not going to send them up in that big, goofy, white outfit. They're going to send them up in, like, we're talking, to bring them up again, Fantastic Four style, skin-tight leotards.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Ryan Gosling's going up in.
Absolutely. And they're not going to want to come back.
No way. That's right, we have the Galactic 12 on the precipice of, in the 50s, becoming the first intergalactic explorers. But you will have to tune in next week to find out what happens to them, because this is the first part of a two-part series about Project Serpo.
Woo! And next episode is none of this other bullshit, none of the Ebens, none of this technology crap. It's all about the Galactic 12, baby, and their goddamn crazy-ass space adventures.
Yeah, that's right. It's gonna be like, it's really more just about the internal gossip of the Galactic 12 while in space. It's kind of like the Big Brother house, but in space.
Yeah, they're actually pretty petty.
Yeah.
They're so gorgeous.
You would never have thought they served in the military, to be honest. That's right. Spoiler alert, things are going to get nuts. You think this was a lot of alien action for one episode? Wait until part two, people.
I'm loving this. This is a great story.
I hope you've enjoyed part one. Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah.
Holy shnikes. We made it to 2019 in one piece. We have so much to bring you this year. We're super excited. Another year of paranormal shenanigans.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
Hope you had a beautiful holiday period. And as you know, we got more episodes for you next week.
Yeah, 2019, guys, it's looking spooky. So we have more than enough content to fill. Don't you worry about that.
But before we go, we would be remiss if we didn't mention our first ever live show.
That's right, folks. It is still happening.
Believe it or not. Believe it or not.
Whether the Vault Festival wanted to happen or not, we've had to change venue 4 times. You know, there's some MIBs that RSVP'd, so we had to shut down that event, start a new event.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a wild roller coaster.
Anyone that booked a ticket called Mr. Smith, we had to cancel that event because we just couldn't take any chances. We didn't know if it was your boy from The Matrix.
Yeah. Mr. A. Smith, we know you. The A was agent. A dead giveaway.
But that's right. Tickets are still available. We've been posting the link everywhere on our socials, so just follow those to pick up your tickets to make sure that you get the chance to go.
This is a night that you're not going to want to miss, guys. This is the commune coming together as one,
making
real world appearance. We're super excited about it.
That's right. Check out the live show. Check us out on our socials. And otherwise, we will see you next week for part two of this paranormal tale. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And as the Galactic 12 would say, to space and even further.
You really want to be in the Galactic Pro.
Yeah, obviously. They're cool as hell.
If you are somebody who loves all things spooky, then Real Life Ghost Stories podcast is the one for you. My name is Emma. I am the host of Real Life Ghost Stories podcast. And every week I bring to you three podcast episodes that are full to the brim with paranormal stories. Every Wednesday and Friday, I release a mini episode, which is dedicated to the spooky stories of our listeners. And every Sunday, we deep dive into a famous paranormal case. You can find Real Life Ghost Stories wherever you get your podcasts.